Scarf Potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Empire of Light, Emancipation, The Whale, Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio, and It's a Wonderful Binge. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the Trailer Park, and the Home Cinema Roundup, featuring a look at Pearl. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Let's quickly just glance through the box office last week. Nothing terribly crazy. I mean, Black Panther topped again. It had $17.5 million. Violent Night did pretty well with $13.5 million in number two. And that's good. That was what they expected. That was a good number for that movie. Even though it comes in at number two, I mean, it was an R-rated, violent Santa Claus movie, so that's not exactly going to appeal to the family market. It was a little bit of a boost into the box office. Strange World had dropped to number three with only $5 million, which is just showing it doesn't have the staying power. And I think it goes back to the idea that it's hard to explain what that movie's about in like a sentence, because you can go back to the podcast archive and listen to what I had to say about that last week. The Menu's still holding on pretty decently at number four with $3.5 million. And then Devotion is still kicking it in at number five with $2.7 million. There was a Crunchyroll movie that completely bottomed out in there. So Crunchyroll is not ubiquitously ruling the box office whenever they drop a film. We'll see what happens as they move into 2023 with some more anime releases. But that really kind of looks at the box office for last weekend. But the more interesting piece of news that has been cycling through the movie nerds that I know, earlier in the week there was a story, and I think it was broken by Variety, talking about how the movie Black Adam is going to lose between $50 and $100 million. And the reason for that, the main reason for that, is it had a huge production cost. It had cost almost $200 million to make the movie, and then you factored another $100 million for marketing and advertising, which is what was being reported. And the studios only keep about half the money because the rest of the money has to go to the theater rentals. So whatever your budget is, you have to double that to break even. So they would have had to make like $600 million globally to make that money back, and they're not going to. It's topping out right at about $400 million, just under it right now. And I mean, it might still trickle in a little bit of money, but you know, it's that a lot of that money is going to be small because it's going to be heading to HBO Max soon, and it's kind of made it run its course in the theatrical. But most movies, actually, a lot of movies don't make profit during theatrical. It's all the extended stuff, and plus there's merchandising and stuff. It's a superhero movie, and you know, it's got Dwayne Johnson behind it, so there's going to be merchandising potential to it. Well, and then The Hollywood Reporter broke the story in midweek that Patty Jenkins had submitted her treatment for Wonder Woman 3, you know, the follow-up to Wonder Woman 1984, and apparently it was rejected. It was turned down, and at this moment it stands that Patty Jenkins directed movies with Gal Gadot are done, that she may not even be Wonder Woman again. That's also the discussion. And then there's rumors that they're going to try to transition Jason Momoa out of the Aquaman character and into the character of Lobo. I think those are more rumor at this point. But then there's also that Flash movie floating out there that comes out next summer that is just embroiled in controversy, all because of Ezra Miller and what they're doing with their life and the mess that they've made. So the rumor is, at least the way things appear to be shaking out, is there might just be a complete reboot, and they might jettison the Snyderverse completely. I don't know what that means for Aquaman 2, because that's in production. I also don't know how that works into Shazam Fury of the Gods, which is coming out in a couple months. So there's a lot of questions as to what's going to be happening, and James Gunn and Peter Safran are the ones in charge of setting up DC movies going into the future. And they're supposed to give a 10-year plan, and I believe that they're giving that presentation to CEO David Zaslav next week. So there's stuff on the chopping block. Even James Gunn responded very cryptically on Twitter and said, well, these stories, there's some truth and there's some half-truths and there's some complete outright non-truths in those. And he says, whatever comes up, we're not going to please everybody, which is just a general thing people say. But that's sort of telegraphing that there's going to be some people that are going to be upset about this, and they might just reboot the entire DC franchise and start from scratch, which they should have done from the beginning and done it in a logical, unrushed manner instead of ramming everything through. So we'll see, but I mean, I think they're going to keep the Batman standalone movies that you got with the Batman, because that thing made almost $800 million worldwide, and they're going to keep the Joker sequel they're working on, because those kind of exist outside of a timeline, which I think would be smart. You don't want to tie everything to the Robert Pattinson Batman, because that's kind of what got him in trouble in the first place, tying it all into the Man of Steel. That's how we got the mess of the Snyderverse. But, I mean, just DC movies have not been doing well. Part of it's because you don't have China and Russia to bring in a lot of money for them, because without the Chinese and the Russian releases, you're just losing a lot of money, because there's so many moviegoers there and such an appetite for event films. And especially action movies tend to translate better from language barriers, because it's about the action, oftentimes, you know, to its detriment, about the action more than it is about the story. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. Speaking of super movies, let's talk about another super movie that's going to be coming out, and that's coming out on April 7th, and that is the Super Mario Brothers movie, which stars Chris Pratt as Mario and Charlie Day as Luigi.
Not sure if you know who I am, but I'm about to rule the world.
Wow,
But there's one problem. There's a human, has a mustache, just like you.
Do you think I know every human being with a mustache wearing an identical outfit with a hat with the letter of his first name on it? Because I don't.
Bowser is coming. Together, we are going to stop that monster.
What I find interesting about this trailer is there's very little Mario speak. There's very little of Mario speaking in this trailer. And that's interesting, because the buzz on the internet is people are not very happy with Chris Pratt's voice in the movie. Because it doesn't sound like Mario, and it sounds like him doing a terrible Mario impression. And like Charlie Day as Luigi, everyone's fine with. People love Jack Black as Bowser, but I don't think they like Chris Pratt. And this might be one of those things where Chris Pratt is going to be kind of a joke in this movie, while everything else feeds into the fans' expectations. So we'll see. This one, it could be good, but you know, if they can just write a story that also incorporates this stuff, It has to work, because there's always problems with video game movies. The next one I want to talk about is Transformers Rise of the Beast. I don't know what number it is, like 15. And that's coming to theaters on June 9th.
Stand down!
I'm not the one to fear, Prime. There is a darkness coming. Of all the threats, from both your past and future.
It was all a dream.
You've never faced anything like this. Let them come.
Kind of like Bumblebee, I'm excited to see a Transformers movie that was not directed by Michael Bay. His movies are just nonsensical and problematic, and they're just poorly, poorly written. I get no sense at all of what the story is of this movie. I get no sense of whether it's going to be a decent story or not. It could be absolutely terrible. It could be at the level of a Michael Bay movie. It stars Pete Davidson, so you could go either way that way. But still, you know what? I'll be willing to give anything not directed by Michael Bay a try. So I'll be interested in seeing this one in the summer. Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about Empire of Light, and It's a Wonderful Binge. Support for Fat Guys at the Movies is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Their products are precision-engineered tools for your family jewels, with Manscaped's performance package, the ultimate men's hygiene bundle. Join over 7 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive offer for you, 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the code FATGUYS at manscaped.com. If my math is correct, that's about 14 million balls. Look, whether you're a fit snack or a big fat slob like me, you've got some hedge trimming to do. And, you know, let's face it, life is full of wrinkles, and so are your privates. So personal grooming can be terrifying. But what's great about Manscaped's tools is they're waterproof and they're lightweight. It also has an LED light so you can see where you're trimming your nooks and crannies. Best of all, the Lawnmower 4.0 reduces the risks of nicks and accidents using advanced skin-safe technology with a ceramic blade. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code FATGUYS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use the code FATGUYS. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tool for the job with Manscaped. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the movies of the week. Empire of Light. Sam Mendes directs this drama about a troubled woman working at a cinema on the English coast in the 1980s.
Look around you. This whole place is for people who want to escape. People who don't belong anywhere else.
How do you feel?
I do feel a bit numb, I suppose. All these people.
I'm the only one who knows the truth. Do you understand me? I'm the only one!
Hillary, please open the door.
It's funny because Sam Mendes has such a weird filmography. Came on very strong with American Beauty, won an Academy Award for that. And then he did some interesting follow-up work like Road to Perdition. But then he did some smaller movies which had some stars and stuff, but they were not something like Road to Perdition was a period piece and it was very heavily stylized. And even though something like Revolutionary Road, which is something you do with Kate Winslet, his wife at the time, and Leonardo DiCaprio was a period piece in the 50s, it wasn't as stylized as Road to Perdition. But he also did stuff like Away We Go, which is just a romance kind of, I guess it's a romance, romantic comedy, but of a married couple who are having a baby, starring John Krasinski and Maya Rudolph. But then he was like doing James Bond movies, and then he did 1917, and now he's really kind of dialed back, and Empire of Light is a much more intimate story. Part of it, it's done with a love of film. It's about this theater in the 1980s that's struggling with keeping its audience, even though, you know, it's long before the whittling away of people's appetite for going to the movies has happened recently. But it does have that love letter to cinema, which seems really heavy-handed. I'm sorry. I mean, look, I love going to the movies, and I have great memories of being a child in the 80s going to movies. But it just seems so pushy at this point. Now, it also has a fantastic cast. I mean, Olivia Colman's in it, and I love Olivia Colman. I also love the fact that she's finally getting recognition. I mean, she was slumming around there doing a lot of just smaller roles, and I mean, people liked her, but she wasn't getting huge parts 15 years ago. And now she is, well, she won the Oscar for The Favorite, which was what, in 2019, 2020. And she was fantastic in that movie. And I just love the fact that she's doing more and more stuff. Yet you'll turn on some British TV show and she'll have a relatively small part in it. That's just kind of how the Brits do movies and TV. But Olivia Colman's great. It is her story. She is this middle-aged woman, and when she starts having this relationship with this person who works at the theater who's younger than her, it kind of opens her up, and she kind of broadens her horizons, but then it also sort of triggers these unresolved mental issues that she has. So, I mean, she's got a lot to work with, but then the movie, it's trying to be everything, because it's that middle-aged woman's tiger's tail type romance. But at the same time, the guy she's having a fling with is this black kid. He's like 20 or something like that. And so you're dealing with the racial issues in the 1980s in England, because there was a rise of skinhead activity back then. So they kind of throw that in there at some point. Then you have to deal with the just sort of like the love of cinema and the adoration for movies and that sort of thing. But you also have stuff like, you know, like Toby Jones plays a projectionist. I mean, it's a small little part. But and Toby Jones is great at everything he does, but I mean he's so good in this, but his part's just kind of a throwaway. And same thing, Colin Firth plays her boss at the cinema, and he's kind of just thrown in there. It seems like such odd casting choices for underutilized actors, and they're trying to juggle so many different ideas and themes. It just becomes crowded, and you kind of get whiplash, kind of going back and forth. Sam Mendes is trying to bite off a lot and chew a lot, and then this, and he's not chewing it all properly, and so it gets kind of jarring, and it does get a little pretentious with the love of cinema stuff that gets almost preachy to a point. But you know, I mean, while Olivia Colman shines in the role, the story just feels manic. And it grasps at too many themes and challenges. Yeah, it really is kind of a dud, unfortunately, because the people involved in it are all very good. But I'm still going to have to say Empire of Light kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Okay. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the next movie, which is on Hulu, and that is It's a Wonderful Binge. The annual binge has been scheduled for Christmas to help people deal with their crazy family members.
Why, oh why, did they have to put the binge on Christmas?
I am not going to stand by because you all want to do a bunch of slam balls.
Andrew, we're not kids anymore. This binge is our chance to take our lives to the next level.
You're going to fix things with your family.
I'm Craig, your mom's new lover.
I'm going to propose to Sarah.
I'm going over to her dad's house to ask him for permission.
Come with me if you want to binge.
Who are you?
I'm Angel. I'm going to show you what it would be like if you were never born.
This is terrifying.
Now, if you don't remember what the binge is, it's sort of a spoof of The Purge, where, you know, The Purge movies are for like 12 hours, all crimes legal, even murder. It's about a future a society where they do this murderous purge and it gets it out of your system so there's less crime throughout the rest of the year. It never works. The purge is not something that could really happen in real life. But they made this movie, The Binge, a couple of years ago, and it went to Hulu, and it was basically if, instead of The Purge, you were allowed to do whatever you wanted to in terms of drugs and alcohol. You can all drugs and alcohol was legal. You could do take whatever you want, as much as you want. And then it went illegal for the rest of the year. And these movies, they're not meant to be taken seriously, because you really look at something like that and you'd be like, so many people would overdose. I mean, people would just be dead. And then what about all the crimes that they commit while they're under the influence? I mean, if you really try to start to think through the movie like this, it collapses completely. But so don't think. And that's the whole point. I did not like the first movie, The Binge. I thought it was tedious and obnoxious and just crazy to be the sake of being crazy. But so I started watching this movie, not looking forward to it. And you know, holy cow, I actually found myself laughing in this. I found myself enjoying it. I thought there were some clever jokes. And one of the characters who's played by Argyle from the Stranger Things, the guy who was the pizza guy, he's the character that gets the It's a Wonderful Life reference because he wishes he had never been born or something like that. And then Danny Trejo, as his angel, comes and shows him what his life would be like with hilarious consequences. So that's where they get the It's a Wonderful Life reference to it. But you know, part of it is it doesn't glorify it. It shows how stupid a binge would be and how bad and silly people act in situations like this, and it's just meant to be obnoxious. It also features Madison from She-Hulk with two N's and a Y, but it's not where you think it is. I find her hilarious on She-Hulk. It's one of those things that I'm usually not a fan of, like, drug movies, because they usually tend to be written like the people who are doing them are on drugs. But doggone it, if this thing didn't make me laugh, it has some genuinely funny moments and genuinely clever lines. I mean, look, you know, God help me, I laughed a lot. It's stupid, it is sophomoric, and it is hedonistic. But I did have fun. I'm ashamed, but I enjoyed it. I found it funny, and it's exactly what you think it's going to be. But like I said, it has some clever moments to it. So I'm going to have to say It's a Wonderful Binge kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about Emancipation and the Whale. You want to hear one of the scariest noises a man can hear? Makes you cringe, doesn't it, if you know where that's going to be going. But if you use Manscaped, the Lawnmower 4.0, you have less to worry about. The Manscaped Lawnmower 4.0 reduces the risks of nicks and accidents. It uses a ceramic blade with advanced skin-safe technology, and it's much safer to use on your wrinkly bits. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code FATGUYS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Use the code FATGUYS. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tool for the job with Manscaped. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about another movie that's new. It's in theaters. I think it actually opened in theaters last week, and you can still find it in theaters this week, but it was launched on Apple TV Plus this weekend on December 9th, and that is Emancipation. Will Smith stars as a man who escapes from slavery in Louisiana after Lincoln issued the Emancipation Proclamation.
We must get to Lincoln's army. 5 days through this swamp.
There are many ways to die in a swamp.
There are many ways to die here.
I will not be afraid. What can a mere man do to me?
Follow the sound of Lincoln's cannons.
This made a little bit of news a couple months ago when they announced they were actually going to release it, because this was his follow-up to King Richard. And that would have been a great move for him, except of that little Oscar slap that happened that got him banned from the Oscars for, what, like 10 years or something like that. And when they announced they're going to do this, I think they know that that's going to be a burden on them. They're like, this is going to hamper our chances at award season. And Antoine Fuqua, who's the director of it, I think he's facing the same dangers as well, because it's guilt by association. You can't have your star be the guy who slaps Chris Rock because he told a somewhat offensive joke to your wife on national TV. You guys are actors. You should be able to deal with that without running and resorting to violence. And on top of it, this movie has a very anti-violent message, because, you know, it's anti-slavery. And even though it's about a guy who has to fight for his life and his freedom, he's doing it very much under duress. So here's the problem with a lot of movies like this, like a slavery movie. A lot of them have been done before. You know, ever since 12 Years a Slave, which was a while ago, but you still sort of feel like, oh my gosh, dude, are you going to bring something new to the table? And on one hand, I'm exhausted with movies like this. On the other hand, they're necessary, because we literally have people out there trying to stop talking about slavery in certain ways in textbooks and in schools, because they don't want people to feel bad because their white ancestors were part of the problem. And nobody should learn history based on only what makes you proud. You should learn the real history and the true history, and to understand what people went through. But then, on the other hand, you're back at the point of telling a slavery story, which are exhausting and depressing, and they're unpleasant and uncomfortable. And they had the 1-2 punch of 12 Years a Slave and then Birth of a Nation is what they called it. It was the Nate Parker movie about the slave uprising. And that pretty much covered it. You saw how terrible it was to be a slave. I mean, do we need more movies of that? And the other thing that bothers me, and this has always bothered me about movies, especially films that are about, you know, something like either slavery or Nazis, like the easy bad guys. Whenever you make a movie with these characters in them, and in this one, you have slave hunters and slave wranglers, and you know, you have some really unpleasant jobs. And every single person, with the exception of Ben Foster, plays a slave hunter, and he's at least got some depth to him as a character. But every single other person that even a white guy who touches the slave trade in any way, they're these walking, talking redneck stereotypes. They're always talking like this, and you can barely understand what they're saying. They're dirty and they're filthy and they don't walk upright well and they're all mean. They got scallops on their face. And I'm not saying that these people were wonderful people, because they were not. But what I'm saying is, when you make characters like that, or in a movie with Nazis, when you make the Nazis these almost cartoon stereotypes, it absolves people because they're like, well, I'm not that. That's just a cartoon. If you give some sort of humanity or depth to these bad guys, then you can demonstrate how regular human beings can do these horrible acts. Because otherwise, it's just the evil bad guys. People aren't like that now. You know, you get that response. But it's just sort of like if you watch a Holocaust movie, you're like, no, you need to see how people who lived near the concentration camps, how they were able to compartmentalize their emotions and their morals to allow this to happen in their background, and even continue after to deny it, because those are real human beings that were Nazis and slave hunters. And we need to understand how people can do that as a human being in order to stop people from doing that. If it's too easy to just kind of brush it off as a caricature, I don't think that serves the purpose. Now, the other thing with this movie is it's shot almost in black and white. And only in these wide shots do you see, oh, there's a little bit of green, or maybe there's a little bit of red from a blood. But overall, it's like almost in black and white. And I know he's got an artistic reason for it, and I kind of think I understand it. But I'm like, use your cinematography, you know, get some color and depth into the movie so it doesn't look like an old dingy photograph. Because again, that removes you from the emotion and the reality of it. It tells a powerful story, but it comes on oppressively heavy and it fails to break new ground. So while it's effective, I don't know if it's necessary. So I'm going to say that Emancipation still kind of rocks, but it's not a knocking it out of the park type movie.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about The Whale. A broken man who's become a 600-pound invalid tries to reconcile with his daughter before he dies.
Do you ever get the feeling people are incapable of not caring? People are amazing.
This is getting a lot of buzz for Brendan Fraser's portrayal of this character who's 600 pounds. And obviously he's wearing a fat suit for this. And it's about this guy who's had his life kind of broken. Things happened in his life that defeated him as a human being. And he was never a thin person. He was always big, but then he sort of fell into food. Like, people who get broken like that, they will fall into their vices. You know, if they're an alcoholic, they'll fall into their drinking themselves to death kind of thing. He's eating himself to death. And I think it shows a realistic view of how that's a comfort to him. It's a salve for him. He's not actually going through the hunger suppression as much as he is the endorphins you get from the taste of chocolate or fried chicken is the only thing keeping him sane. And he's got an estranged daughter played by Sadie Sink from Stranger Things. And she's not a nice person. And it's him trying to throw some optimism into everything. It's a very complex movie. And also, here's a little thing. He's not the whale. I mean, people think, oh, a big fat guy, it's the whale. He's not the whale. There's a whole background of Moby Dick in here. But that's not what the whale is. I think it's pretty obvious what the whale is. But it's a depressing movie, and it's sad. But it's also not overly long, too, and that's nice, because this movie could have been a slag if it was 3 hours. But, I mean, it's very well made. Brendan Fraser knocks it out of the park. He is fantastic in this movie. And because he's acting, you don't see much of his person. It's all under the fat suit. And he manages to act like this is all part of him. And it's not just the makeup effects. It's the way he carries himself. He doesn't look like he's being weighed down by that. He's dealing with the emotion. And it's a great acting performance. But I think it also shows the coldness of humanity and the optimism of humanity. I think it kind of does both. I mean, Brendan Fraser gives a great performance in this complex and touching story of redemption. I'm going to say the whale rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I got a review of Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Pearl. The Manscaped's performance package also includes the Weed Whacker, which will trim unsightly nose hairs and ear hairs, easily cleanable, lightweight, waterproof, and it helps you out when you got hair growing out of weird places. And we all know the older you get, the weirder their hair gets. Look, the holidays are coming up, so you can order one for every guy in your life, because everyone can use a little trim. And you don't want to share these, you know, they're personal items. So with the promo code FATGUYS at manscaped.com, you'll get 20% off and free shipping worldwide. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code FATGUYS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use the code FATGUYS. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tool for the job with Manscaped. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's finish up the movie reviews and talk about Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio. This is on Netflix. It came out in limited theatrical release, which is what Netflix does. They put a movie in theaters for a week or two or three in order to get that qualifying theatrical run for award season. But this is the second Pinocchio movie we've gotten this year. We had the CGI live-action hybrid remake that Disney did. Robert Zemeckis did it, and it was on Disney Plus. But this is different. This is done by Guillermo del Toro, and it's stop-motion. And I'm a huge fan of animation in general, but I love stop-motion. And they're very different movies. So don't get confused. There have been two Pinocchio movies released, but they're quite different, and you can get them both on streaming services. In Pinocchio, Guillermo del Toro directs the stop-motion version of the story of a wooden puppet who wishes to be a real boy.
Papa! It speaks!
He's just a puppet!
No, I'm not! I'm a real boy!
People are sometimes afraid of things they don't know.
I don't understand!
We have found him, our star.
Everyone shall love you and call your name Pinocchio.
Now, I had the opportunity to see the exhibit at the Museum of Modern Art in New York City that has the effects, that has the models and the puppets and the sets for Pinocchio. And I find that stuff fascinating because, I mean, you have these... The photographing of it in the movie, it looks life-size because they put the camera really close. But the maquettes, they're only about 18 inches tall. And the detail is amazing. So being able to see that, it makes you appreciate it even more. And because here's one of the challenges with this movie. I'm not even talking about the story and the film itself. The animation is so meticulous. The producer was saying it was a 1,000-day shoot, which meant that they were rolling cameras one frame at a time for what? It was like 4 or 5 years when you take out at least some downtime for weekends or whatever. And you're so used to seeing CGI now that as you watch this movie, your brain starts to accept it as, well, that's just the animation. Then you're like, whoa, wait, hold on a second. They're filming that frame by frame. They're not just generating this in a computer. It is a meticulous, probably maddening job to work on this, but it is a beautifully animated film. And it also is a very Guillermo del Toro version of Pinocchio. Now, I've never read the original book, which was written in the 19th century. because after the Disney version, the remake, and after seeing this one, I kind of went and I looked at the book because I said, well, do these follow the story much? And there's a lot of differences to the original book. The original book goes in very different places. But this one, because it's Guillermo del Toro, he has it take place during the buildup to World War II, when fascism was rising in Italy and, well, in Europe in general, but Italy and Germany were the big ones. And if you've seen enough Guillermo del Toro movies, he's got some very anti-fascist themes in all of his films. I mean, going all the way back to stuff like Pan's Labyrinth, obviously. But he talks about anti-authoritarianism a lot. And doggone it, we need anti-fascist themes nowadays. There's not necessarily a rise of fascism, but a rise of the allure of fascism in this world right now. And you got to remember, we fought a war over this 70 years ago. So let's not go down this path again. And the thing is, you might think that, oh, well, how's that playing into this? Well, it works. It plays in there very well, because this also is, it's not as much Pinocchio's movie as it is Geppetto's movie. Geppetto has always been sidelined in the Pinocchio films, mainly because the Disney version, it's just a guy who wanted a real son. But they go into the story of Geppetto and why he wants a real boy. And it's about him dealing with Pinocchio and working with Pinocchio and teaching Pinocchio. And it really gets into his character. I mean, Pinocchio is, he learns stuff, but he's not the most complex character. Geppetto is in this movie. And the cricket, who is, it's not Jiminy Cricket, but it's a cricket. And played by Ewan McGregor, voiced by Ewan McGregor. There's growth in that character too. And it's one of those things that you see it in the design, looks very European and it works. And one of the things I found really neat about this was when they bring in the Blue Fairy to bring the puppet to life, because we all know the story of Pinocchio. And then later on, he encounters versions of these sort of supernatural creatures. And the second those creatures show up on screen, you're like, oh yeah, we're in a Guillermo del Toro movie for sure. Because it looks like it walked right out of his workshop. And it is visionary and beautifully done. It's really is a great version of Pinocchio. I mean, artistically brilliant designs and relevant messaging make this new take on the classic story fresh and topical. I'm going to say Pinocchio is fantastic. It totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent! Yay!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Spotlight this week is on Pearl. It has recently been released on DVD and Blu-ray, and you can get it on demand. It's from A24. And this is Ty West's prequel to X that tells the story of a woman living on an isolated farm, and her desire to become something bigger causes her to snap.
Please, Lord, make me the biggest star the world has ever known, so that I'll make it far, far away from this place.
Now, caring for your family during these times is admirable, but you only get one take at this life.
If only they would just die.
Pardon?
Nothing. I want to be special, dancing up on the screen like the pretty girls in the pictures.
I will not let you leave this farm again.
It's a prequel to X, but in a different way. It tells the story of some of the characters in X, but it's like 50 years before X took place. If you saw X, which is sort of that's kind of Ty West's homage to like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, that kind of late 70s, almost slasher movies but weren't slasher movies yet. You know, stuff like The Hills Have Eyes type of discomfort and sexual angle to it before they became just sort of these goofy little slice and dices that you got with like the Friday the 13th and the Halloween and the Nightmare on Elm Street movies. But this one tells the story of the woman who was in the farmhouse. So it takes place in the 1920s. And one of the things that I first drew my attention to it is Ty West has a great cinematic knowledge. And so he does a lot of stuff that is very deliberately calling back to elements of the past. Like when you watched X, it very much had the feel and look and elements of a 1970s movie like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. This one is told sort of in the golden age of Hollywood. It's got these sweeping vistas and the title cards look like something that was on an old movie from the 30s or something. And one of the things I loved about this was the fact, even though it takes place in the 20s, it's a vibrantly colorful, just rich-looking film. And too often, when a movie takes place in the past, and usually it's the past can be anything from the 70s and before, they like to shoot it in almost black and white. You know how I was like talking about Emancipation? It feels like it's in black and white. Or earlier this year when they had Amsterdam come out, that thing looked like it was shot in black and white. I mean, it was in color, but they had it all muted because they wanted to look like an old photograph. No, this one does not look like pictures of the 20s. It looks like what the 20s probably looked like, bright and vibrant. And it's this slow burn story about this woman going mad. And I'm not going to say she's slowly going mad because it's a pretty quick trip. And you know there's a sense of dread. That's the whole thing. There's this, you know something's just going to go bad in this movie, and you're just waiting for it to start. And it's compelling, and there's just this fantastic performance by Mia Goth as Pearl, because in a different movie, it would have been a laughable performance, because she's really over the top with it and extreme with it, but it works with the flavor of the film. She does a great job acting. You really see her acting chops in this. You don't always get to see somebody's acting chops, but boy, she is good in this movie. And I really enjoyed it. It's bloody and unnerving, and it's extremely effective. Yeah, it's a beautiful slow burn thriller with an unnerving performance by Mia Goth. Pearl is one heck of a film. If you're a horror fan, definitely see it. And even if you just like a thriller now and then, you know, it's worth the shot. So I'm going to have to say Pearl totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent! Yay!
That's it for this week. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about the little independent film called Avatar, The Way of Water. And until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.